It is time for another visit with our militant grammarian, one of my favorite times of the week. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Catherine Sherlitz. Yes.
Thank you.
What do you got?
Well, I would say that I have a topic perfect for this blustery winter day, but because we're recording this, there's no telling what the weather is today.
That's right.
After all, we're in Arkansas.
Right.
But thanks to our old friend's mental floss, we have a list of obscure words for winter woes.
Okay.
So let's get one of the most disgusting words out of the way first.
All right.
Kyle, you know how sometimes, especially in cold weather, you'll feel something tickling your nose, and then you see a droplet fall.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, for teachers who often bend over students' papers, that can be really scary.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, that pendulous droplet on the tip of a person's nose has a name.
I'm going to say it's a mucolet.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, thank you.
It's a meldrop.
Ooh, that's better. That's better.
Derived from Scandinavian roots, originally a meldrop was a drop of foam from a horse's mouth around the bit, that metal crossbar that's in the horse's mouth. The 16th century Scots extended the meaning to describe a drip of water from the tip of an icicle, as well as from one's nose.
It would be fitting that it starts in Scandinavia, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they've got a long time
trip
to think
Bahamas
about this.
Is not likely to come up with that.
Exactly.
True. A long-forgotten dialect word for the nose or for the metal hoop pierced through a bull's nostril is snarl.
Okay.
Then in the 18th century, the word meant a stuffy head cold.
A snarl.
I like that.
I do, too.
Yeah, because, you know, when you got it, you feel snarly, don't you?
Yeah, so far, two for two. Meldrop and snarl are on point.
All right, now a guessing game for you, Kyle.
Okay.
What common flu symptom do you think these words refer to?
Okay.
Kiffle, hosk, boak, tisic, and kinkhalst.
Coughing.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's got that kind of word sound to it. To kiffle is to cough because you have a tickle in the throat.
Okay.
To hosk, as you might imagine, is to cough harshly or painfully. To boak is also to cough violently. A tisic is a dry, tickling cough. And a kinkhoust, according to 19th century vocabulary of East Anglia, referred to a combined violent cold and cough.
This all sounds like Snow White's medically challenged seven dwarfs here. Kiffle, hosk, boak.
And here's another one. A fox's cough is a hoarse, scratching cough that refuses to clear up, apparently so called because a fox's call is so raucous and guttural.
Yeah.
And finally, one to stay away from is the churchyard cough.
Ooh, that's going to put you underground.
You've heard that.
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh.
It seems like I read it in, like, Victorian literature.
Well, this is a 17th century term for a bad cough, seemingly indicative of impending death. Yeah. So you're a goner. The latest medical advice these days says to cough like a vampire, right?
Yeah, you cough into the inside elbow.
Yes. This also applies to what other symptom?
Sneezing.
Yeah. Or if you're sick in the 16th century, the sneeze was called a sternutament. Sternutament. I have no idea how it's pronounced because there was no guide. It's S-T-E-R-N-U-T-A-M-E-N-T, sternutament.
And that's what we would call the vampire?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But, well, it's a sneeze.
Oh, I got just you. A sneeze. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh, sneeze is so much better than that.
Right. As with the cough, for sneezing, the dictionary has quite a rich vocabulary to fall on, at least the archaic dictionary. Chisop. Atisha.
That sounds like that's onomatopoeic right there. It sounds like a sneeze.
Well, it also sounds like for what you need when you sneeze.
Oh, a tissue. Yeah. Like you're asking for it.
That's right. You sneeze and you're asking at the same time.
Right.
Neasel. That's I love that one. That really sounds like it. And the adjective ptarmigan, the first letter of which is a silent P, describes anything that makes you sneeze.
So pepper would be a ptarmigan.
Yeah. For me, dust is a ptarmigan.
Yeah.
Even the word sneeze itself is of interest, as it was originally spelled F-N-E-S-E.
Oh, you're making that up.
No.
What?
Before its initial F was misread as a long S in the 15th century. You remember how you had see all those Fs everywhere in that old stuff?
Yeah, there
and
were
they're
some
really S's. Yeah.
Works of literature that I just put back on the shelf and said, I'm not doing that. Yeah.
Okay, Kyle, what do you think the word headwark refers to?
A headache?
Yeah.
Fever?
Yeah.
Headache.
Yeah, headache and pain, actually.
Okay.
Old English word. And then more formally is cephalalgy, a word for a headache coined in the early 1600s.
Oh, that sounds serious. Cephalalgy sounds like something you don't want to have.
That you're headed for a courthouse cough.
Exactly.
Courtyard cough.
Courtyard cough.
Could be courthouse, I guess. I think it's bound to be the origin of the over-the-counter cold symptom treatment called Cepacol, that the spelling is very much alike. And for the really serious headache, Gallia, a Latin word for helmet, which, according to one 1706 dictionary, refers to a headache because it takes in the whole head.
Okay.
So it's a really bad
I appreciate
that. Well, with all these symptoms, you're probably feeling at least a little offish.
Peaked? Weak?
Not exactly unwell, but you're not feeling your best.
What, in my household, we say less than 100%.
Yeah.
Just something's a little off.
But just, not quite.
I can still go to work.
Yeah,
I'm just
feeling
awkwish, offish, offish?
Right.
Okay.
Awvish. A-W-V-I-S-H.
All right.
Probably derived from the use of ish to mean not quite. If you're offish, then you're not exactly unwell, but you're not feeling your best. Mm-hmm. Likewise, from the 18th century, you might be feeling frobly-mobly or fobly-mobly. I want you to come in some day and say, I'm here, but I'm feeling frobly-mobly.
I have to prepone my meeting because I'm frobly-mobly.
Exactly. The lexicographer Francis Gross defined the meaning as indifferently well in his glossary of provincial and local words in 1839.
Frobly-mobly.
Frobly-mobly. And if you're only feeling offish and really not that unwell, you might practice presenteeism.
Presenteeism?
What do you think that means?
Presenteeism?
What would be the opposite of it?
Pasteism?
No, not present. Not
okay.
Present as in here. I'm here.
Absenteeism?
Yes. It's the opposite of absenteeism.
Is presenteeism?
Yes.
There are two kinds of people in the world right now. Those who are like you and me right now, Catherine, who are like just overjoyed that they've discovered this.
I know.
And everybody else is like, what the hell?
What the heck are they talking about?
Okay.
Okay. It's a term coined in the early 1930s, pretty recent, for the act of turning up to work despite being unwell.
I love that. So we don't like absenteeism that much, but we don't really like presenteeism either.
No, because it's going to spread around.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
This is great.
Do not practice absenteeism nor presenteeism.
Right. Well, practice absenteeism if you're sick.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
You might decide going to work is better than allism, an obscure term from psychology and psychiatry. The restless boredom or ennui that comes from being unwell and confined to your bed.
Yes.
And you can only watch so many Andy Griffith
reruns.
That's
right. And yes, absolutely.
I think we'll quit now, Kyle. All this talk is making me a bit offish.
Right. Catherine Sherald is our militant grammarian.